Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, good. I'm glad somebody's here.
I
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome. My apologies that I didn't realize about 6 months ago when I did the calendar for the teleconferences that this would be Memorial Day. So I hope each of you have had a terrific holiday and that everything's going great. I want to indicate also that I'd like to add on like 10 or 15 minutes at the end of our next seminar, our last one, for just a discussion, your input, questions, and that sort of thing. And I want to get to questions and discussion in just a moment. But I want to sort of synthesize two or three of the things, that the input that I've had, the questions that I've had, just to make a couple of comments, because I've had some excellent questions and responses, and I really, really appreciate that. And this is kind of to reiterate and put in a little bit of a different perspective about how we each have stories that we tell about ourselves. And as coaches, when we listen to people carefully, you'll hear certain patterns in the way they talk about themselves, certain themes and attachment patterns that become clear over time when you listen at this level, at the level of the process. You know, one person may be the hero of every story they tell, the smart person, the clever victory or triumph that they always manage to create. Another may be, may I ask for a mute, please? Your microphone is picking up movement, like paper movement and other kind of things. So unless you're ready to talk, if you would mute, I'd rather keep it open so that we can have more of an interaction, but with words. Okay? Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, someone else may be the victim of their stories. They collect injustices. I remember an aunt and an uncle of mine when I was a kid who would capitalize on every family gathering to talk about some adventure they had driving to some part of the country. And they would always have some kind of disaster. And they went through a period of time of uncertainty. Sometimes even it sounded like living or dying, being injured or not. But then they would always emerge triumphant. I even wondered at the time if they created these cliffhangers in order to have the full attention of the entire family. Of course, I could never get the full attention. It seemed like every time they took off somewhere new, it was like a hero's journey. So the story you tell about yourself ultimately becomes you. The way you craft your narrative crafts your character and ultimately your identity. And then this is why it's important for us as coaches with change and transformation to help someone transform the core identity that they have, the operating system of how and who they see themselves. Because the story then becomes your life. You know, for example, someone says, I'm a nurse. He or she has taken a learning and a certification combined with a livelihood and presented it as an identity. And remember, and we've talked about this, when you're ready to acknowledge that you create an obstacle, you're ready to consider the possibility of not creating it. And that's a coaching perspective in that way specifically. And I want to highlight again in the resources component after the outline, there's a needs and an ideals exercise. Those are two that I use a good deal with clients in the beginning to be sure that we both have a clear picture of their needs and their ideas, what guides their looking to affirm their purpose. Because when needs and ideals align with strategy and story, it's dynamite. All of somebody's going in the same direction. So thoughts or questions or things that might be helpful to talk about before we move into our material? I'm eager to hear from you. Any things you'd like to hear discussed, or have any questions that have come up in the reflection or in the listening to the seminars? If not, we'll move into the material. Final call? Anyone? Well, I'll put us on lecture mode, and then we'll have a bit more time then in the end for discussion. Okay, we're going to talk about a particular way of deconstructing a story. This is the roadmap system. This is the acronym of the 7 steps of really understanding a story and constructing or revising a story. It's really an understanding of the algorithms. So a brief review and overview. Much of our behavioral and emotional response has become automatic. Neuroscientists estimate that 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious, as we've discussed. This means that the vast majority of our responses are based on already established algorithms for behavior, emotional, attachment patterns, the shadow story operating system that's on unconscious autopilot. So this means that when we're listening to a client's story, they're not thinking of it in the way that we're talking about it now. They're not thinking of it as a story. They're not looking at it objectively like that. This is simply a construct that I'm using with us for coaching, because for our client, it's not a story. It's the way things are. It's life. It's reality. Only when we hear it and listen to it and engage someone collaboratively can various elements be looked at. So this is the skill that we have, along with having a model of how to look at and understand how something begins to be composed. So our lives are filled with these script patterns of how we respond to situations, and we repeat certain patterns. Our brain wires those then as the default mode. The script for each scenario in our lives operates without conscious thought. At a family meeting or board gathering, as we've talked before, we tend to sit in the same seat each time. We look over the menu, but then order the same thing. The roadmap system involves seven steps. The roadmap is the acronym for the seven steps to understand the algorithms of behavior, emotion, and attachment. It's a strategic way to deconstruct and understand personally constructed stories and how to systematically write new code for mind, brain, and behavior. The approaches to changing behavior that work. Consider what this does to personal stories, to identity. So the final step facilitates the development of corresponding new identity to sustain this transformation. This is the P of roadmap program, new identity. This is, however, something that we do throughout the course of our coaching conversation, not a final step. So let's look at the roadmap in a practical way using the example of career transition, because change and transition is what we're supposed to be talking about. So let's apply it to career transition. So step one, to recognize your story, recognize your career story. If you were to configure it as a shape, what would it be? A trajectory? A circle? A bell curve? A flat line? Obviously, this is looking at this question from a wide-angle lens. Clearly describe your career story as it exists now. Then describe what you want in your career story. If someone wants to make a career change, and this is going to happen with you client after client, and it probably already has to the degree of experience you have, are they fully informed about the one they're in now and wanting to leave? For example, if someone has only performed at 80 or 85% capacity, concluded that their job or career is not rewarding, then decide to move on, they don't have the information they need to make an informed decision. They cannot make an informed decision of what it's like to operate at 100% capacity. They've never been there. To do, in other words, an apples-to-apples comparison, they would have to function at 100% of their capacity in their current career to contrast it with the anticipation of 100% capacity in a new career. It's likely that the same process that resulted in a ceiling, for example, of 80% would be repeated in the new situation. That 20% is your coaching focus. Question, and I want to add some questions to ask to bring this to a real specific focus. At what percent of your capacity are you functioning in your work now? Now, everyone I've ever asked that immediately has a number. They don't have to wait. They don't have to think or get back. They'll say 75% or 60% or 90%. They know immediately. It's always surprising to me. So if it's not 100%, explore why. That's the immediate coachable moment. Have you ever been at 100% of your capacity? In other words, do you know what it's like to be fully successful at your current position to be able to make an informed decision? Here's a brief story that illustrates. At the beginning of my career as a psychiatrist, for a small part of my professional time, when I was on the faculty at Baylor College of Medicine, I was a consultant for the Institute of Rehabilitation and Research. This is the facility that Representative Gabby from Arizona went to much later, working with people who become physically disabled in adolescence or adulthood, usually as a result of an accident. Not surprisingly, some of these individuals considered suicide as an alternative to a lifetime of disability. So instead of trying to convince them not to kill themselves or just treat their depression, I initially indicated that I could understand their feelings about the overwhelming change in their life. Suicide was at least one way they could control something about their life, especially when all other aspects, even fundamental body control, was out of reach. I recognized that at that moment in time, the idea of suicide, of being able to control one thing in their lives, to know that they had the option of ending the pain, was the hope that paradoxically allowed them to keep living. They needed that choice. I recommended that we work together, to each of them, to achieve their full capacity now, recognizing that it would be at a different level since their onset of disability. Only achieving their full potential at their new level could they then make an informed decision about whether they truly wanted to live or not live as a physically challenged individual. I told each that I would entirely understand if after achieving full capacity and then being able to make an informed decision, that if they decided to die, I would respect that decision and I would like to be there with them when they did that. I worked with several hundred people over a period of 5 years. Thankfully, no one decided to die after going through full physical and emotional rehabilitation and achieving a new, though different, level of function. I was there for those steps as well. Step two on the roadmap, own your story. Own your career story, especially needs and ideals. Be clear about needs and ideals, if and how they align with your passion and your purpose. When your passion and expertise combine, terrific possibilities emerge. So a question here, what do you want in your career? And listen for whether the client is getting away from something or going towards something, or rarely both. And it may be helpful to distinguish temporary frustration from permanent dissatisfaction. And be cautious about confusing dissatisfaction, disillusionment, or even burnout with terminal disillusionment. Before you can distinguish temporary from permanent, it may be necessary to realign or recommit to get to that 100% to know what it's like to be there. And keep in mind that choosing the wrong career may be every bit as easy as it was the first time you chose the wrong career. I know a couple of people who have picked a second spouse and came to that conclusion. One client spoke of a particular storyline she had bought into. She was not addicted to work itself, to money, or the things that money bought, but she was addicted to the pursuit of perfection. For her, it was a work ethic. More became a goal. More money, more work, more perfect work. The story of the pursuit of money, because that was the tangible focus, had become a substitute for other stories. It wasn't really about the money for her. The ideal of more, of course, lacked an endpoint, so her self-esteem never was validated. More and perfect, you can never get there, so you're never going to be satisfied. If more goes to the tangible referent of money, more is never enough. She had become exhausted with the perpetual series of occasions for hope of being perfect, yet never quite getting there. Now, hold her in mind. We're going to come back to this situation in a moment to look at another step. Step three, assess your career story. Now, remember, a belief or a fact is an anatomical reality in the brain. It's a physical part of a neuronal network. A teacher can't simply present a simple explanation and remove an existing neural network from the student's brain. You can't just list three reasons an idea is wrong and expect it's going to immediately rearrange someone's neural networks and pathway. Or even that presenting a new fact is suddenly going to override the old one that it debunks. But change can occur as a process, but not an event. It's an inside job. This step is to assess beliefs to see if they are limiting, and then to consider trying out other ones. What's another way to look at this? How might my thoughts be limiting me? Who has a different perspective on this? Are there questions I'm afraid to ask? And at some level, do you know what they are? Because remember, denial is a powerful engagement, just as a secret is a powerful engagement. What do I really want? What do I need to let go of? Here's a question for this step. What is present and what is missing in your current career? What information do you need? Research new information, perhaps including evolution of personal skills, abilities, aptitudes, new methods. Another question. What would your career and life be like if you already had what you wanted? What is it costing you personally and financially to not have what you want? Distinguish internal dissatisfaction from job dissatisfaction. It's way too easy to externalize or blame an external situation, because then you can try to change it or then you can try to leave it. Internal struggles and unhappiness can be blamed on a job or a marriage. It may seem easier to change an obvious external cause. At least it gets outside yourself. It's out there, rather than to look inside. Some people even at times create job-related struggles in order to crystallize unhappiness or conflict in an attempt to escape or at least apply a recognizable remedy. Then, it may seem more tangibly evident to get rid of the problem is to leave the problem, leave the job. 4, decide on a plan, the fourth roadmap, D. And, once deciding on a plan, how to make it work. Align needs and ideals with purpose and passion focused on a goal so that all of you is going the same direction. You decide where you can make the greatest contribution. You want to stay informed and engaged at whatever you do, although it may be different than what you've done for 3 or more decades. It means that you will examine again your fundamental strengths, your needs and ideals. That's happening around us and with us as we speak. Not just the mode and the means of work, but in this pandemic, some more basic questions are being asked. Perhaps for the first time, you'll be self-directed, self-organized. No corporate structure or job to fit into and govern your day. The challenge of your schedule now is a blank page, and you have to fill it in because you're working at home or working remotely at least. You will need to cultivate a deep understanding of yourself, your strengths and weaknesses, how you learn, how you work with others in new ways, how you sustain a focus and concentration, and deal with assaults to that concentration and attention, and where you can make the greatest contribution. And a question for the coach, perhaps to the client, how would working with me get you where you want to be? In other words, what is your objective? Now, I want to return to this client pursuing perfection. Her medical practice was booming, yet she wasn't enjoying it, wasn't feeling fulfilled, only looking at the next task to do perfectly. And ultimately, I highlighted a pattern that I noticed and got her to look at it with me. It seemed that as soon as she began enjoying her work, really got immersed in it, she began procrastinating at some specific task. She would put off completing work, like doing charts at the end of the day, which restored her old feeling of dread and vague guilt about what she should be doing. When we looked at this and she acknowledged the pattern, she recognized it immediately. It prompted her insight. She said, well, work has always needed to be work. The minute I began to feel pleasure at work, it's like I began to feel vaguely guilty because I should be working. She had an entire understanding of this because of the attachment pattern with her dad, who was an immensely successful business person. So, one possibility here would be to create a vision of success at your specific goals. Include all the sensory details, all the experiences of successfully arriving at your goal. Review it twice a day. When you have a vision and have all of the detail of it, all the specific detail, including sensory detail, you're rewiring your brain. When you revisit it at the beginning and the end of each day, you're etching that as a future memory. The affirmations that you have to support that vision help revise the software to support it. A very simple example of having a plan means you don't need to be motivated. A plan supersedes motivation and not feeling like doing something. You don't need to be motivated. All you need is a plan and to stick with it. For example, your plan is that every Monday from 3 to 5, you work on your marketing. You may not feel like it. You may not be motivated. But if it's Monday at 3 o'clock, you stick to your plan. Step 5, map a new story. Where, when, how to begin. SMART goals, initiatives, next best action. And navigate with your brain's error detection mechanism. The human brain creates patterns of connections in our ongoing search for meaning. These patterns, these mental maps, relate to our ability to plan and predict the future. These are our stories that we come to believe, as I mentioned at the beginning of this seminar. It's just useful to know what they are to be able to create exactly the ones that we want. Discomfort and uncertainty begin any significant journey of change. Our brains have an error detection mechanism located very close to the emotional center that says, this isn't normal. This isn't what I expect when we try something new. So we get a vague sense of discomfort. Now, it's important to read this as our reaction to change, because this discomfort can be read as a signal that we're doing the wrong thing, or that our instinct or intuition means that this isn't the right way. The correct reading here is this simply means we're doing something different. Then we have to go about all the other assessments. So it's important how you frame something to determine how you proceed. When our predictions get confirmed repeatedly, patterns become hardwired and automatic. Then we notice when something doesn't fit that predicted pattern. The error detection mechanism functions to compare whatever new or whatever input, actually, with what's expected. And a mismatch creates a disruption in the expected order of things. So think about how this error detection mechanism can explain a number of different dynamic factors. We notice differences more easily than confirmation. So it becomes easier to focus on the things we do wrong, while we may struggle to list our strengths. If an advice we get is unfamiliar or unwanted, it sets off an error detection response, meaning somebody can reject an idea before consideration, and there's another barrier to resist change. And this is also why telling a client what to do may trigger the error detection mechanism. So giving a client answers can backfire. Focus on problems energizes because it activates the error detection mechanism. Bad news gets our attention because it activates the error. It's not what we expect. So we become addicted to problems. We become focused on things that are out of the ordinary. Rubbernecking on the highway. It activates the brain from the diversion of just looking down the highway and listening to the the book on audio. The mental maps that were tailor-made for a certain context in our lives, such as stress, or in childhood, may not apply to usual situations. The hardwiring isn't permanent, and we can't revise it. And this is the system to do it. When you want to change, look at a system. The roadmap is a macro system to creatively and methodically address the algorithms, the behavior manifestations, the specific ways, stepwise, to create change. And this means that the brain's error detection mechanism can be a part of a powerful internal navigation system. So, our area of expertise, choice architecture, is an art and a science. People can be nudged toward decisions. We will not tell the ICF on an exam that we ever nudge anybody to anything, but of course we do. People can be nudged toward decisions that will improve their lives in healthy and wealthy directions. We are susceptible to biases that can lead us to make decisions that are unhealthy, uneconomical, short-sighted. When we consider how people think, that helps us to design ways of collaboration and choice architecture that makes it easier for people to pick better options, to be more aware of their choices, to develop and use this roadmap, to recognize, own, assess, to go through this process for important decisions. Step 6, author changes. This simply means implement the plan and move toward the goal. Somebody needs the correct paradigm. Changing careers means changing paradigms. A mistake of extrapolation would be to assume that the present experience would apply to a new career, you just changed the setting. And this is from a specific example from mentor coaching. Even if you go from head of HR at one mid-size oil company to another in the same city and expect things to be the same, the culture is worlds apart. The correct paradigm would be not only about the process, but the content of the new career as well as the new culture, as well as the process of change. Assumptions within a paradigm need to be examined for correctness, and the assumptions that a client has may not be evident even to the client, so it's something we need to listen collaboratively for and ask about. Ask specifically, what are they expecting? For example, and this is a very well-known and vivid example. In making a transition from medical practice to coaching, I assumed getting clients would be similar to getting therapy and analytic patients. For me, that was to share my work and thinking, to occasionally present a paper or write a book. My secretary would take the calls, put patients on the schedule, on the waiting list. Well, wrong for coaching. Coaching is a profession, but it's also a business. Marketing is a world of difference. My mentor coach drugged me kicking and screaming into marketing. So, a question here may be, who else needs to be involved in your plan? And step 7, program new experiences to then incorporate them into your identity. Both change and transition involve changing a core identity. Your identity is the story you tell yourself about yourself. And it includes things without even considering it, about what we'll do, what we're willing to consider, what we won't do. Well, that's just not me. Identity is a set of beliefs that relate to who you are as a person, what you can do, what you will and won't do. You can hear 3 words about a film or a book and decide that's not for you. Well, I don't do science fiction. When changes don't last, someone has not changed their identity. When there is a shift to incorporate the changes and the transformation into the working model of how and who someone is, how they see themselves, it gradually becomes permanent. The strongest force in the human psyche is the need to remain consistent with our own identification of ourselves, our identity. Well, that's not what I do. Well, that's not who I am. We stay consistent with our own personal definition, whatever it is. And there may be some questions about this, because this is something we do consistently and help a client incorporate and transform how they see themselves and develop this self-reflection and self-awareness consistently throughout the coaching experience. So let's apply this now to successful and productive work as a kind of application of a new career story. Here are some principles that are related to career that I've come to see and wanted to conclude with. Time is not an adequate measure of hard work. Hard work is not an adequate measure of performance or success. A work ethic is not the same as a productivity or a success ethic. You've heard people, well, I was at my desk for 8 or 10 hours today. You know, that's a work ethic. If possible, delegate everything other than what you do uniquely well better than anyone else. That's to aspire to, but that really leverages your time, impact, effectiveness, income, and satisfaction. Time management is energy management. Stress regulation is energy management. Know and follow your passion. Know your optimum state of mind, the particular performance zone to accomplish a specific task, and know how to stay in it. Know how to enter your optimum state of mind, how to get into your zone. A simple example, creative writing. It's a specific performance zone. It's a specific state of mind that you want to enter. Know how to enter, sustain, and maintain until you're ready to stop at the decided upon time each day or each week. Editing, different part of the brain, different time zone, don't go back and forth because it takes more energy to change states of mind. Know how to enter your optimum state of mind, how to get to your zone. And we'll, if we have time, I'll return to this to give you some examples of well-known artists and authors who do specific things, and athletes, performers who do specific things instantly as a performance cue to get in their state of mind. When your passion and your expertise combine, huge possibilities occur. Structure gives you freedom. And if you're thinking of retiring, consider retirement as a new career. What's its mission and purpose? What's the business plan? The difference your wisdom will make in this career. Finally, consider this possibility. When you reach a point in your life that you can celebrate the freedom to work rather than the freedom from work, that's success. So let's look now and review, in a way, operating systems. Behavioral patterns and belief systems downloaded especially from parents and important other people and social context in the first years of life become automatic to operate without observation or awareness. And as I've mentioned, neuroscientists estimate that about 90 to 95% of our behaviors and core beliefs are pre-programmed in the unconscious mind and operate on autopilot. And we rarely really get to the origin. We see the result. We see the behavior because beliefs drive behavior. Behavior drives performance. So what this means is we can create two stories simultaneously that can go in opposite directions, and this is what we want to tease out and look at specifically with a client. The surface story, I want to create wealth. The shadow story, well, I don't think I could make really big money, or I don't think I have what it takes, or what if I do all of this and then I still fail? I'll be really embarrassed. So the surface story, that 5 or 10%, has a huge shadow story that may be unconscious. It doesn't have to be, but it could be, that goes in the opposite direction, so there's a stuckness. Another example, I want to claim my freedom and become my own authority. The shadow story, well, you know, I can't have total authority because my partner acts like I'm taking it away if I do. Mentor coaching requires us and develops being insightful, reflective, self-observant, to have mindfulness of ourselves in order to be empathically attuned to the mind and experience of a client. In other words, the more we know our story, the more we develop mindfulness and self-reflection ourselves, the better position we're going to be to help our client develop his or her story. Consideration of a career needs to be considered in conjunction with developmental phases of the individual, as well as within that career, the developmental phase of where the individual is. In other words, needs and ideals need to be considered in terms of life phase, the developmental issues more in the foreground at a certain life phase, like the beginning of young adulthood may look very different than the end of middle age. And similarly, a career within a particular position has its own developmental history, the beginning, middle, and end of that process that has different missions of creativity, of proving oneself. Yeah, there's a whole consideration there that we don't have time to get into, but those two aspects, the developmental phase of the individual and the developmental phase of the individual in the career, are important to assess and consider for any individual decision. So, once a plan's put into action, there are four things that we can do. Monitor choices, question ideas, probe reasoning, and always ask clearly and honestly, does it work? And this is the fundamental thing that we do in coaching. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't, do something else. That's way easier said than done, because if it doesn't work, you know, it's just like somebody who you're talking to that doesn't understand English. The natural inclination is to say English louder, like that's going to work, to try harder. So here's some mentor coaching applications. Translating this into mentor coaching now. Challenge your mindset. For example, see every task as an improvable skill. How you can get better than just how you can get done. Approach work with new perspectives. Think more simply, more abstractly, deeper, more synthetically. Think long term. The place of your work in a system, not just a job. Get feedback from other sources, multiple sources, including even outside your field. Do these approaches consistently. It's what distinguishes super achievers. So let's look now at some very simple essentials to engineer effective change. And there are some very specific aspects. Focus specifically on the next step. Terry Fox ran the Marathon of Hope, a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Because he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed about 24 miles a day and completed the run in 143 days. He was asked immediately after the race how he kept going when he was exhausted and was physically challenged and had thousands of miles ahead. He said, "I just kept running to the next telephone pole." And that's sometimes why a client can seem resistant, but it's not resistance per se. It's simply they don't know what the next step is. So shrink the change to a next specific step. Do a small ask rather than a big abstract one. Specify the next step, not abstract or global. Some is not a number. Soon is not a time. Act healthier is not a strategy. 3, make changes tangible and concrete. Construct a yardstick, a map, to determine where you are, where you're going. That way you can measure progress along the way and tell what's a detour and distraction. That's what we do in a simple coaching model. What would you like to focus on? Where would you like to get to? That's the map. The beginning, the success map of the end, and the middle is jazz. Make progress measurable. A specific destination, a tangible focus on the next step. Make progress visible. Small, specific, attainable milestones that are visible. And celebration of each small victory. That's part of internalizing the process, making it one's own, and evolving an identity. Maybe one of the best examples of shrinking a task to a tangible next item is Alcoholics Anonymous challenging its members to one day at a time. It shrinks the change to a manageable, foreseeable, specific action. There's no abstraction about the next day. A small target leads to small victory, or about this day rather. A small target leads to small victories, the cumulative experience of effectiveness and mastery. So in one way of thinking about it, all you ever have to do is the next right thing. You can't get any more shrunk in terms of perspective than that. All you have to do is the next right thing. This shrinks the change to immediate steps of effectiveness and the experience of momentum. So what we've done just now in this discussion is to apply the scientific method to examine, to measure, to test, to consider change. The scientific method is a challenge to create a mindset of inquiry generates discomfort, but that also is what generates growth and catalyzes growth. So let's look at this in a summary overview from another perspective. The AAA principles of change to author a transition story. Awareness, acceptance, and action. Those are the three A's. 1, you're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each of the storylines with a question, is it working? And make that a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business career story, remember, yes or no. Your relationship story. Your money story. A not so secret to success is that you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is. Pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you're still going to have to pay in some way. So this is what can make a difference in our lives. It makes it easy to pay to do what you really want to do, what you're passionate about. And I'll bet you do that every day with your coaching. I know how much fun and energy creation it is daily. 2, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story. And now think about that. Positive or negative, based on present, past, or future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. For example, the belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as the belief of abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Simple math says that when you use your attention to focus on what you don't have, you deplete your energy to engage what you do have. And here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and it assumes a momentum and a power, a life of its own. Remember that you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it, the author of it. And here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. 3, you're writing your own story. Decide what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure what they want. Here's a neuroscience combined with law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? Well, the first, back in the day when there were travel agents, a travel agent asks 2 questions. Where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? And a goal is like MapQuest. You program where you want to go. You make a map, determine the time. Now, a caveat here, to know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. Think about that. Remember that. Also, what you resist, you draw toward you. Why is that? Resistance is an engagement. It's sort of like saying anger is as passionate and attachment as love. If you find yourself resisting change, it's already occurred. And most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor, but they aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. 4, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates had fashioned a vision and specific goals for their life in business. 5 decades later, those 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group. A similar study from Dartmouth undergraduates a decade and a half later, and it was 3% had specific goals. They had 97% of the assets. Interesting figures. It's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time. Where, when? The travel agent questions. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose some weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by 5 p.m. July 31st, 2020. Here's a good idea. I want to save some money for retirement. Here's a goal. I will pay myself first by setting up an automatic transfer of $200 to my retirement fund from my checking account the first day of each month. Then, write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, a quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs, every August riding on the coast of Maine. Now, you'll have to substitute your own goals there. Then, reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step for progress. Divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. And the name of it is the next thing. Just go to the next telephone pole. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in your pursuit of goals. Write your story consistently for it to become the default mode. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing what's working, more of what's working and less of what isn't working, will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, This is really simple. Good parents have known this for centuries, but sometimes it takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. That's exactly what we do in coaching. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback. To your spouse or partner, ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. To your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? Then, how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Babemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. The honest feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself. He remembers who he is and why he's important to the life of the village. That may have been an original 360-degree feedback. Even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered and reconnect through mindfulness with our true essence. Now, a sidebar here. You've probably noticed that each of these AAA principles to change and author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first step of the roadmap, first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide. Compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, mapping change and authoring new experiences. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance. Now, there's a review on the work pages of your outline that help us understand two important things. Why people give up on goals. So knowing that and having that in mind to reverse it from the beginning is success insurance. 10, you're writing your own story. Take a chance. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes, talked to 6,500 people, and asked 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? Which newspaper should I advertise? And as he walked away, he said, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In his first month, he took in $72,500. His first year, he netted over $1 million. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. So don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Beyond was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience or equipment? And he said, yeah, I run after my sheep every day. And I got these boots and this baseball cap. When the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6, but nobody told Cliff this, and the other runners were sleeping. When he shuffled past, he just kept shuffling along. They were all asleep, and they couldn't tell him what he was supposed to do. He shuffled along for 3.5 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that may limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And finally, number 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. Ed Lorenz conceptualized chaos theory in the 1960s in this way. The initial state of events may seem unrelated and random, but eventually a pattern emerges, and in the end, all the pieces fit together. It's the study of phenomena that appear random, but in fact have an element of regularity which can be described eventually using a different organizing perspective. In the end, all the pieces fit together. I had an experience like that today. I was talking with a guy that I know in the small town where my ranch is, and he said, you know, in late November, my entire family had COVID-19. And I said, no kidding. I wasn't even, he said, they weren't either. They called it the mystery virus. And he named the one person who worked in a hospital system that was ultimately hospitalized. Only later did it make sense, did they know what they each had. Okay, we're in discussion mode. I'm interested in any questions, thoughts, or ideas that you have, any clarifications, what would be helpful. Thank you for managing the background, each of you. Anything that would be useful to talk a little bit further about? Well, I know a number of you will be listening to this because of already existing plans. Jot down any questions, and we'll add 10 or 15 minutes to the end of our last seminar next week just for discussion, because I'm really interested in what you think and the impact and interaction that I already know what I think, and I agree with some of it, most of it, but I'm interested in what you're thinking and the kind of input that you have. So jot down anything you'd like to talk about, and we will we'll do that next week, either at the beginning or certainly the added time at the end. We have maybe 1 minute. Anything before we have to stop this evening? I really appreciate the number of you have signed on, the number of you, even despite the holidays, Dashboard, who are here. And I know there are a large number of people in interest, and I hope this is hitting on what your questions and what will be most helpful for you day by day for yourselves and your clients. So let me hear from you. Thank you for all the evening, kind words. And let's remember that we'll have the additional discussion next week. So have a great rest of the week. Take good care of yourselves. I look forward to picking you up next week, same time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
See you guys.
Good night.
Good night.